Numbers and Tech Podcast is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. Numbers and Tech Podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications expert and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom-branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide-format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That's 208-467-7468. Hi, I'm Melissa, and this is the Numbers and Tech Podcast. Every entrepreneur has a story. Listen to women discuss the financial side of their business, both the challenges and successes. Let's grab life by the bottom line. Welcome back, everyone. We had such a great discussion when we had my husband Randall on for a podcast about websites, domains, and emails that I had to have him come back to talk about web presence. So if you haven't listened to that podcast, certainly go and check it out. It is chock full of all kinds of details. But then that kind of brings us to the next about web presence. So first, let me just say welcome back, Randall. Happy to have you here again.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So web presence, websites, what do we need to know?
So there are two pieces to start with on any website. And I'll there's two to start with and one to end with. So I'll make this very simple.
Okay. So once again, three things.
Once again.
That's the last podcast. There were three things. Okay.
Three things you'll remember, 17 things no one will remember. So try to make this simple.
Okay.
The first thing to always consider whenever you're looking at your web presence, mobile first. Remember that most people are coming to your site on their mobile phone. And just think about your own usage. Do you go home and look stuff up on your computer? No.
And this has been a big evolution. I mean, definitely over the past 10 years, but I even think over probably the last 2 or 3 years.
There are a number of studies on how that actually swaps up. I think Pew Internet says there's 2.3 billion smartphones worldwide, and the market is pretty saturated at this point. So if you know, everyone who has a smartphone now is pretty much the people that are going to have a smartphone.
Right. No one can ever imagine going back to not having a smartphone.
No, for sure not. So mobile first, okay? So always think about it from that standpoint. It needs to be responsive to mobile devices. And one of the nice parts is that our mobile devices keep getting larger and larger and larger, which I use a phone much more as a device than as a phone itself. So that seems appropriate.
So how can we be sure that we are mobile first?
Well, you want to select a website that is mobile responsive. So what that means is it will work on both web and it will work on a mobile device. And there's kind of that mid-ground, too, of tablets. And the tablets are a tough world, and I see this all the time as an iOS developer, because some of the websites, depending on the size of the tablet, will render using the phone's geometry. Mm. If the tablet is much larger, like think of the iPad Pro, that's like sitting at a glass-top desk. I mean, it's huge, which is great. But you don't need to render that in a phone's geometry. You can render that into almost a desktop geometry.
Yeah, because an iPad Mini is so much different from the iPad Pro.
Very true. Very, very true.
So when you say make sure I go out to WordPress and I start looking at website templates, and it'll just tell me, is this website responsive or not?
If you're
mobile responsive.
If you're on WordPress or Drupal or any of those content management sites, for the most part, you don't have to worry about that. Those are pretty much taken care of. But let's talk about the second piece, which is really what kind of website you need. And that all comes down to your business needs. The reality is it's easy to overspend on this kind of stuff. And you don't have to. Take a step back and think about what you're really doing with your website and what it does for your business. I put it in three categories. The first of the categories is simple sites. So do you have a simple page? Do you just need some presence with some contact information? Is it blog style? Do you disseminate information? That kind of thing. That's a simple site. Those are very easy to do on what we call content management platforms, things like WordPress.
Okay.
So that's a simple site. That's one piece. The next piece is complex function websites. And so these are usually things that have a little more to it. Like, do you need an e-commerce component to your website? Do you have an e-learning site? And there are hosted options for these as well. As much as you can write all of this stuff yourself, you can hire someone like me. Can I write your site that does all this stuff? I can, but the reality is I don't want to reinvent the wheel and find out it's still round. For most of these things, it is much less expensive to use hosted off-the-shelf software. E-commerce is a great example. You could spend a ton of time and energy writing your own e-commerce site, or for $29 a month, you could host it on Shopify and then spend your time just doing your theme and getting your Shopify site the way that you want. And then you have all the things that come with it. You have inventory management. You have the harmonization of photographs. You have a nice template. You have user accounts. You have all of those pieces as well, plus payment processing and that goes with. So complex function websites, there's also a large number of hosted options for those. The last of the sites are things that are specific functionality. Login accounts with specific functions. And if you think about it, we use these kind of things every day. Great example of this, social websites. When you log into Facebook, or you can log into Instagram online, although most people, I think, use the app on their phone, the reality of that is, you have an account, your account holds information, it recommends things for you, it provides a feed for you. But this is a lot of pieces also that are more utilitarian.
Okay.
So if you think about it from the standpoint of insurance sites, banking, utilities, mm-hmm. all of those, they have a very specific function to perform for your account. Mm-hmm. And so you really have the three types. Simple site, simple function, complex function, and then specific functionality sites. Once you determine the type of site that you need, you can actually take a step back and say, okay, how can I make this happen? And what does the future path look like? And I wouldn't try to think 5 years down the road on websites. The reality is,
right,
most websites, if you want to maintain decent SEO and you want to engage your customers in a way that is consistent with your business, you should probably think of your website on about an 18-month basis.
And should we be updating our website frequently, or is like 18 months you could just set it and forget it?
I would say update.
Okay.
I mean, if you really want to maintain good SEO and that's search engine optimization, so when people search, they find you, you need to make periodic updates to your site.
Little refreshers.
Yeah, refreshers, that kind of thing. Plus, if you really think about it, I mean, if your website largely provides information, and think about our client base. Our client base is largely creative talent. And for the services that they provide, there's always something new. Mm-hmm. There's always something new. There's examples of work that's done. There's a ton of things that can be added to it. And as you add that on, what you do is you incentivize and you show your customers the type of things that you're capable of and the things that are coming down the line and what's new. You demonstrate your expertise to your customer base. So that is amenable to making updates on probably a monthly basis at minimum.
Mm-hmm. And I also like how you said, like a website, you throw out, you know, possibly an 18-month life on it. When I look back at websites that are even like 2 and 3 years old, which you wouldn't think is that old, they already look dated.
Very dated.
It just amazes me how quickly our likes change.
Well, it's
our design change.
It's different too, and it's different as your business grows. I mean, if you think about it, Google's logo has not changed. Apple's logo has not changed, but that's become part of our vernacular in the way that we refer to things. When we think of Apple, we think of the apple with the bite out of it. Mm-hmm. We think of Google, we think of the colored logo that goes with it. as you grow larger in a business, you become a little bit more static in the things that you do. While you're a small business, and especially while you're a micro business, it's important to stay updated. And that keeps your business kind of fresh. It keeps your web presence fresh. It helps your SEO. It helps all of those components.
Okay. All right.
The last piece is, and let's talk briefly about web tracking. Mm-hmm. So it is important to always track what happens on your website. And there are things that you want to know. You want to know what devices come to your site. You want to know where they're coming from. And part of that, if you really think about it, if you run a localized marketing campaign, if I run a localized marketing campaign and I spike my input from China, my localized marketing campaign has not worked, right? Mm-hmm. So if I run a localized marketing campaign, no matter how you do it, I want to see that I'm picking up in people from the Treasure Valley area coming to my site. Mm-hmm. Additionally, you want to be able to know what people are looking at on your site.
Okay.
What that does is it helps you to order information in a way that is more amenable to when people come to the site, they find what they want to find. So if you find most people are coming to your site, clicking through four pages to find your price list, put your price list on your homepage.
Interesting.
The point is not to promote more clicks on the site. I mean, that doesn't, it's nice. Is it more engagement? Arguably, yes. But the reality is I want the information that my customers want to get to. I want them to be able to get to it in the most expedient way possible.
Because you can make the other side of that argument. They're having to go through four clicks to find what they need. How many people did I lose that didn't go through four clicks? Those that do two clicks, did they just exit the site?
The first startup I worked at was a gaming company. And when we took two clicks out of the checkout funnel, we added like 35% in sales, which seems absolutely ridiculous, but it makes a huge difference. And, you know, think about our business and think about our clients. For creative talent, your website is not making you the money. Your website is just producing and giving information, providing information that allow people to make a decision to digest your services. So in reality, you want to get that information to them in a much more expedient way.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that a lot.
There are a number of ways to track. So a very popular way to track is Google Analytics. And we see this, and you hook it to Google Search Console, and there's everything with the word Google before it that's part of their web services development stuff. It's they have the market cornered on search.
So if someone wants to find Google Analytics, do they literally just Google that term?
You Google Google Analytics, yes. There's okay. A little configuration that goes with getting all that working.
Okay.
I usually run at least two. And so, again, I'll refer back to our own website, numbersandtech.com. So I run Google Analytics, and then I run a web statistics plugin for WordPress. And so it's very interesting to put the two of them side by side, because then you really have a sense of, you know, sometimes one counts more than the other. And so one of the big things is, you know, bots go out and search the internet for content. And so you'll see those bots search the internet for content. If I find a bot doing that, usually I'll exclude it from my analytics. So okay. It'll be like, you know, your page was hit 270 times today. No, 267 of those were a bot crawling through every word of every page as much as it could. And then the other three were actually people hitting the page. So to try to just sort of align them, I usually put the two things together. Mm-hmm. So
and compare them to see, do they make?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sense? And then, are they in the same arena? Okay.
And then I look at engagement. So how much are people hitting the pages? I look at what pages they are engaging with to try to drive what type of content people are trying to get to. And then the third thing I usually look at is the type of devices. And more for amusement, I look at the browsers that people use.
Oh, do you remember what you find?
A lot of Safari on the iPhone.
Okay.
A lot of Chrome. Mm-hmm. And then you're starting to see a few others really come up.
Okay.
So, and then there's a host of, old Internet Explorer stuff that I just laugh when I see. Mm-hmm. They don't even make that anymore. But it's still running. So.
Interesting. All right. So for web tracking, any other helpful stats that people should be looking at? Or is there just like this menu of things you can track?
There's a menu of things you can track.
Okay.
And it's going to be business dependent, right? Oh. Like we're a localized business. We're a regional business. So for us, we want to see traffic within the region. Mm-hmm. When I see large quantities of traffic coming from Chinese and Russian IPs, mm-hmm. they are not there to entertain our business. And it's mm-hmm. nothing against the IPs, but there's a lot of nefarious activity on the internet. The internet can be described as, you know, think of sitting in your house and someone's constantly knocking at your door, checking your windows, checking to make sure if things are locked. And that's the internet. That's what's going on continuously.
That you saying that reminded me of, we belong to a local car club and you were the website administrator for many years of that. Mm-hmm. And it was shocking the amount of traffic. Was it coming from Russia?
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, a Treasure Valley car club. Why is Russia constantly checking out the website?
Yeah. And it's that seems less nefarious to me. Given that it's a
laughable.
Car, given that it's a car club, and I know, you know, there's a car culture in every country, so that right. seems less nefarious to me than when I see a large amount of Chinese IP addresses trying to hit the servers that we're on now,
mm-hmm.
because we, you know, our content is not provided in Mandarin or Cantonese. Like we're not, mm-hmm. they're not there to use our accounting services. Like I don't even know how accounting or technology runs in the Chinese. You know, in the Asian,
their laws and regulations are totally different.
Right, right. I mean, so you know, that to me is quite obviously, those are hackers knocking on the door. Mm-hmm. So if you see a large volume of that kind of thing, there are things that you can do. Mm-hmm. And so, depending on how your site is configured, you can limit who can actually access it. So you can limit geographically that we don't get
right.
hits from anything outside the United States. So you can make those kind of limitations to your site as well. But just those are the kind of things that you want to look at. At least if you know you can respond to threats, but more than respond to threats, most of what you're going to find is not tons of people trying to hack your site. Mm-hmm. Most of what you're going to find is tangible business information of, you know what, everyone's trying to get to this article or find out when I'm open or what services or what my price list is. And that should really... You should use that data as the content to drive the decisions you make and how your web presence and how your data provision is actually configured.
Yeah, and that lets me know that's what the customers want to know
right.
more about. So I could share that information across many social media platforms or put it on my, what they call it, your landing page, your front page, or things like that.
Don't make people dig.
No.
Don't make
our
them
attention
dig.
Spans are very short.
Well, we're trained like that now. So, you know, don't make your consumers dig. The more that you can help them, the more it helps you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else to add before we make this one short and sweet so they don't have to dig?
Nope. I think we're good.
All right. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Numbers and Tech Podcast. Future episodes will include chats with other amazing entrepreneurs. Let's keep the conversations going, whether you are running the show or working on your side hustle. We give you the business advice you need. If you learned something new or felt inspired, let me know. If you want more tips and great information, follow my Instagram account, Numbers and Tech, or email info@numbersandtech.com. Always remember to grab life by the bottom line.